Better?
Yeah, better.
So,
Thank you.
Okay, very good. Sorry about that. All right. So, yes, let's see. So, good morning again, then. And I have the recording on the lecture I gave on a similar topic 2 hours ago. My computer collapsed, so that recording didn't make it. Hopefully, this one will. And let's see. And if someone wants to turn on their camera for an extra credit point, please feel free. Let's see. Otherwise, let's see the topic for today. I would like to finish up with examples of the algebraic methods in with derivatives before for the rest of the week, and actually a little bit longer. We'll then be moving on to mean value theorem, understanding what derivatives look like. So let me just summarize. So today I'm going to look a little bit at parametric equations. And the both a proof so that you can practice a little bit giving proofs and also an example, just you know, so you can see what those are. Okay, so example and proof. And then the other thing I want to do with the rules is inverse functions and their derivatives. Okay, again, that's something that you saw previously, because Math 21 really does focus heavily on the rules, so those should be somewhat familiar and good to refresh yourself with. However, then the main topic of this course, however, is going to be functions that don't fall into the rubric of the rules. And so for that, I will sort of run through the best area that we have so far, functions and in which spaces they live. And one example to keep in mind is the following question, which we will be able to answer later this week. So is, let me call it epsilon of x equals the function that's one when x is positive and zero otherwise. So it's got this graph. Is that a derivative? So in other words, is f0 equal to a derivative of something? Okay, so just think about that. We will be able to answer it later, but it's something just to sort of contemplate. Okay, so first the parametric curves. So let's see, so the notation, and let me write it this way. So if we have two functions, f of x and y of x, f of t and y of t, on x of x. So f of x of t and y of t are just any old functions. So f u n, remember, is just any old functions on R. Then we write the set of pairs, x of t, y of t. So these are just points in the plane. And the set of those points for any t, some subset of the plane, this is just the curve that's parameterized by x and y. And a typical example where you can deal with the parameterized curves a lot more easily than you can an explicit formula is something like the cycloid, a very classic curve that you get from a wheel. So if a wheel, a radius one wheel is rolling, at say one radian per second, then a point on the edge has a position P of t. Okay, so here's my picture. I have my wheel here and it's rolling. And there's a point on the edge whose position I'm interested in. And at time t, it hits the ground and then it goes up to height two and then it hits the ground and it goes up to height two to something like that. Okay, and so this P of t has a formula, and that's just the x position. So the forward direction is moving forward at time t. That's the center is at position t, and then it's off by a cosine, so plus a cosine of t. And then the y position, it goes between 0 and 2, so it's 1 more than the sine of t. Okay, so so this is a curve that you can describe with a function, but it's not in an elementary form, whereas in this parametric form, it's actually very easy to work with. Okay, so that's a typical example. Let's see, so the first thing that we are interested in with, of course, in this class is derivatives. So lemma, derivative is given by this limit. And so let me just put us in this situation. Let's say that we have x of t and y of t are this time not just any old functions, but now they're derivatives. They have derivatives, so that we can take those derivatives. So these are differentiable. So they're in d1 of r. Okay, and we have some point c with the derivative of x, so the denominator non-zero. Then we get the limit, which I think I wrote down last time, as t approaches c of the change in y, so y of t minus y of c divided by the change in x of t minus x of c, is supposed to be equal to the derivative of y as a prime at y prime at c divided by x prime at c. Okay, let me call this fact one. And fact two, this is the same as the slope of the tangent line to the parameterized curve at the point x of c, y of c. So in particular, if we look up here in our example, we have at some point here, the slope at which this point is moving is the slope of the tangent line to my curve at that point, okay? So that's the second thing that's true. Okay, and let me just do a quick example and then ask you to prove number one. So example, if I just take the one above, so find the slope of the motion of the point. When is it the same height as the center? And that height is 1, because the center doesn't go up and down. It's a flat road. Okay, so so that's the question. And let's see, actually, can anyone guess what the answer is? So this is, there are two places where it's at the same height as the center, right? It's the same height as the center over here and over there. And in both cases, it's moving at some angle, but they're probably not the same. So in one case, it's going up, in another case, it's going down. And the question is, what are the slopes, those two slopes for the motion of that point? Okay, so is it clear how I would answer it? So I'm just going to use 2 up here. So 2, the slope is equal to y prime at t divided by x prime at t from up above. And I have my y and my x. Sorry, I guess I should have labeled those, right? So this, of course, is my x coordinate here. So this is going to be x of t. And this is my y coordinate. So that's going to be y. Okay. And so then I just can compute this derivative. And I have, this is just equal to derivative of sine cosine of t divided by the derivative of t is 1. And then I have minus the sine of t. Okay. And so now I just have to figure out at which t to evaluate it. So how do I figure out which t to use so that my point is where I want it to be? Over here at on the right-hand side or the left-hand side?
It's when t is an integer multiple of 2 pi.
That's
pi?
Correct. That's exactly correct. Yeah, integer multiple of pi. Yeah, integer multiple of 2 pi will be one of those sides, and the odd ones will be the other side. Mm-hmm. Right, so what do we need? We need the height, which is y of t equals 1. So that's equal to 1 plus sine of t. So we want sine of t to be 0. Which is exactly what you just said. It's just n times pi for some integer n. Correct. And so then we just do our computation. So the slope is equal to cosine of n pi divided by 1 minus the sine of n pi. Of course, we just chose it, so the sine was 0. So this is just the cosine of n pi, which is plus or minus 1. And so that's what's happening, right? So it's moving forward at the same speed that it's moving down or up if it's at the same level as the hub of your wheel. Okay, very good. So that's an example on how that works. So now let me just toss you into breakout rooms. Hopefully it'll work this afternoon. So, and what I'd like you to do is try to prove this fact. And actually, can anyone see what limit fact is going to be helpful in proving that before I let you start? Limit quotient rule, right? So so what is the limit of a quotient usually?
The limit of the individual parts, like divided.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Yeah, exactly as you say. So in other words, it's the nicer fact. It's much easier than, say, the derivative of a quotient where you have to use a complicated rule. But with the limit, it's typically the, as long as the right-hand side exists, then the left-hand side is equal to it. And the denominator is not 0. Okay, so let me just give you a couple seconds now to try again. The point is to prove, I hope everyone's clear on what you're trying to do. You're trying to prove this fact here, right? You're trying to prove that the this limit gives you this ratio of derivatives. Remember, the derivatives are themselves defined to be limits. Okay, so that's what you want to do. All right, let me just give you a couple minutes to try to do that. I see some rooms have cleared out, and room one is still thinking. We have a few more seconds. Let's see. Did someone figure out how to prove this? Okay, yes, everyone's back now. All right, so any of the rooms that figure out how this proof would go?
I think.
Okay.
So just the limit equation for f of x divided by the limit equation for the inverse of f of x. I wanted to find a way so that the x minus c in each one would cancel out, but I'm unsure about that.
Okay. So in other words, you want to look at you want to say y prime of c, you're going to write in its limit form. Is that what you said? Okay. So you have this over x minus c, y of x. Let me certainly not use x's, but t's, just because we have an x for another meaning here. So, t minus y of c, like that.
Yeah.
Okay, and then of course the same thing for x. Okay, so did everyone get that far? So those are the definitions. One of the two, it's the most useful one in this setting, right? Okay, and so now you want to get those x minus c's in the denominator and in both of the denominators. So did anyone figure out a way to do that?
Wait, could you repeat the question?
Yeah, so you're trying to prove this fact over here, right? And this is the numerator, right? Which is this thing, and it's got this t minus c in it, right? And this is the denominator, which has also got this t minus c, but there are no t minus c's over here, right? So you want to somehow introduce those t minus c's. Yeah, so divide them. That's right. Okay, so let's do that as suggested here in the chat box. Which is what you see here. So, y prime of c over x prime of c is equal to the limit as t approaches c of this y of t minus y of c divided by t minus c divided by this limit as t goes to c of x of t minus x of c divided by t minus c. All right. So now I have the 1 over t minus c in both the numerator and the denominator, but they're both inside of a limit, right? And so how do I get rid of these two limits so that I can cancel the denominators nicely? Does that make sense? So right now I have a limit in the numerator here and I have a limit in the denominator. If I didn't have these limits, then this t minus c and that t minus c would cancel and I'd be in the form that I'm looking for, right? Yeah, exactly. As said in the box, I can use the limit quotient rule. So this is equal to the limit as t goes to c of just their quotient. So y of t minus y of c divided by t minus c divided by x of t minus x of c divided by t minus c, as long as both of these exist. But as long as the right-hand side exists, I guess it's the upper side exists, but that's because both limits exist and the derivative at x is non-zero. So this is since y prime of c and x prime of c exist, and x prime of c is different from zero, right? So those were in our hypotheses over here. So we had that since these are differentiable, that means that x prime of c and y prime of c exist. That's what that d is telling us. And then the hypothesis was that x prime of c was non-zero. So that means that this upper limit here, this quotient of limits exists, and as long as the quotient of limits exists, it's the same. So as long as that right-hand side exists, it's the same as this limit over here. So then we're done. Okay, and now we're in good shape, right? So now we can just cancel the t minus c's from the numerator and the denominator, and we're exactly where we want it to be. So this is the limit as t goes to c of y of t minus y of c over x of t minus x of c. Okay, does that make sense? Does anyone do anything differently, or any questions about that? Okay, so that's one proof of a rule. And the only other thing I wanted to do then with these rules was inverse functions. And then I said back to the list of functions that we know. So inverse functions. So this is basically switching the roles of x and y. Okay, so let me just give a definition. I say that if the composition of f with g applied to x just gives me x back, so I'm back to that function, then we'll call these inverses. So then f the inverse function to g. And write f inverse is equal to g. Okay, so that's the notation. And actually, I claim lemma if we have this above situation, so f inverse is equal to g, then, so does anyone know what happens if I compose in the other direction? So if I take g of f of x. So remember, it's not always true, right, that when you take g of f of x, that's the same as f of g of x, right? It's something like the sine of 1 over x is different from 1 over the sine of x. But what about in this special case where one is the inverse of the other if I take them in the opposite order?
Still x.
It's still x, that's right. So this in this special case, it's the same thing. Okay, so this is in other words, that means that a G inverse is also equal to F. Also, right? So this is unlike, say, sine of 1 over X, which is sine of X composed with 1 over X, which is quite different from 1 over sine of X. Which is 1 over x composed of sine of x, right? So typically they don't commute, but in this special case they do. Okay, and so that's what an inverse is. So now we can compute what the derivative looks like just by computation. So compute. Let's say that we're in this situation. So if they're both differentiable, so f of x and g of x are both functions that have derivatives, so in d1 of r, and they're inverses to one another. So we have f equal to, let's say g equals f inverse. Okay. So then f composed with g of x is equal to x. Then let's just compute the derivative. Okay, so let's just go through and do it. And so here's the trick. One is equal to, it's clearly the derivative of x. But since the function x is the same as this composition, right, that means that this is also equal to the derivative of f composed with g. Okay, but now how do I, what's another way to figure out the derivative of f composed with g? Which rule would I use there?
Chain rule?
Yep, so then I just use the chain rule. And I get that this is the derivative of f composed with g. Whoops, that's supposed to be a g. Hard to read. Times the derivative of g. Okay, and so then we can just divide both sides, and we are done. So let's see. This derivative of g. So let me write it this way. So f inverse prime of c, that's the same as d f inverse applied to c, but f inverse is the same as g. So this is just dg applied to c, but I have dg right up here, right? And so if I divide both sides by this, I'm going to get dg. So let me do that. So this is equal to 1 divided by df composed with g applied to c. Okay, and now I can just unpack what that means. So this is just 1 over f prime of, okay, and what's g? G is just f inverse. So f prime of f inverse of c, just unpacking that denominator. Okay, any questions about the notation, what that means? Okay, so that gives me a straightforward formula for computing these things. And let me add one more little note. If we have the situation that f inverse is equal to g, does anyone know how their graphs differ? Because I always like to have a, yeah, exactly. Someone has it there in the chat. Reflection across the line y equals x. I like to keep both the computational and the geometric pictures in mind. They're very useful throughout calculus. Reflection through the line x equals y. Okay, let me do a few examples of this, and then give you one little problem to try to see if you to give a little practice using it. So some examples of inverse functions. Okay, let's start with some. They should all be basically familiar. So let me take a sum f of x and f inverse of x. This was a useful technique for a couple of derivatives in Math 21. But let's just start with some straightforward ones. So what if my function is x squared? What's the inverse function? And I'll graph it while you tell me that. So x squared, like that. So what do I have to do after I square something to get back to where I started?
Root.
Right, so this is just the square root. And of course, since inverses are the same, and you know, the inverse of x, they switch just like we just explained. Okay, and let's see. So actually, what are the other functions that you use this for in Math 21? There are a couple other where this was really quite handy. Can you remember? All right, well, let's start with e to the x. What's the inverse to e to the x?
Natural log.
Mm-hmm. And this is there. This is how we proved that the derivative of the natural log is. How we found it. Or I hope so, because that's the way to do it. There were a couple other functions that we used this trick for to find their derivatives. Do you remember what those were? inverse trig functions. So we had things like the tangent of x and the arctangent of x. Okay, and if we draw these, of course, we get that the reflection does what we expect. This one's harder to draw. There it is, something like that. Okay. Okay, so those are ones that are very useful. Maybe I'll just try one example. So e.g., if I try to find the derivative of the natural log, and just use this formula, it says it's 1 over the derivative of e to the x composed with the natural log. But e to the x is e to the x, so this is e to the x composed with the natural log, which just makes it 1 over e to the plug-in natural log where you saw x, which makes it 1 over x, which is what we expected. So that's how that works. Okay, and I just want to do two more because I want to do a fun example. So what's a function whose inverse is itself? I didn't think of such a function.
X.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one. So if we have x and x, and because when we look at the graph, well, there's the graph. And when we reflect it over that line, well, nothing changes. I claim that's not the only one. What's another function whose inverse is itself? So you can either think about it in terms of the function where you do something and then you do it again, and you're back to where you started. That would be a function that's inverse itself algorithmically, or you could try to think of a graph where when you reflect it over the x equals y line, you get the same function, the same graph back. Okay, I'll give you another one. There are actually lots of them, but most are hard to find. But 1 over x, right? If I take 7 and put it into 1 over x, I get 1/7. And if I put that back into 1 over x, I'm back to 7, right? So if I do it twice, I'm back to where I started. And also, if I graph it, it's symmetric around the x equals y line. Okay. All right, so I'm just giving you a couple minutes to try this problem in breakout rooms again. So So let's look at this case over here where we have functions that are their own inverse and just play around with that a little bit. So problem, if f is equal to f inverse, oops, there's an inverse, and I have a point f of c is equal to c. Right, so that's a point like up here. This is a point where f of c equals c. Actually, all of these are points where f of c equals c on this one. Then I want to find the derivative of f at that point. Okay, and let me just say, I'm going to just toss you into work for a couple minutes to try to think about that. Let me just say that you can do it either using the formula or using the geometry or both, and you should get the same answer. So it's interesting to think about it either or both ways, whichever, I would start with the one I'm most comfortable with, and then I would do both just because it's useful to be able to do both. Okay, anyway, let me just put you back in the room for a couple minutes to try that. Okay, I see most people are back now. A couple more. All right. So what did people come up with? So I guess there are three things. So one is the answer. What are the possibilities? And then two is how to do it algorithmically. And three, how do you do the same thing from the geometry? Okay, so the prime of C. So that's not what I got. Okay, so I see someone got a different answer than I did, and anyone else get an answer? Okay, someone got one. That's closer to what I got. So one. Okay, and it doesn't hurt to look at our examples. So what are the answers in these two examples? What are those two slopes?
There's also negative one for 1/x.
Yeah, that's right. So one, this one gave us a negative one and this one gave us a one. So those two possibilities should both occur, right? Because we found examples where those are both there, right? So that's, and did anyone manage to show that those are the only possibilities? Okay, well, let's see. So how did you get one? That would be a good hint.
I took the derivative of the y equals x one.
Okay.
The f of x equals x, yeah.
Okay, so this formula over here. This one. Okay. So we want f prime at C. Okay, and so this is the same, since F is equal to its inverse, right? We can take a F inverse at C, right? And so then we can use the formula, right? So what does our formula tell us? It says that this is the same as 1/F' of F inverse of C, right? Okay, but now we can use the fact that F is equal to F inverse and F of C is equal to C. So then what's F inverse of C?
C.
That's right, so that was just C. Does everyone see that? I'll do it in two steps, but that's right. So this is a 1/ f prime of f of c, which is 1/f' of c. That's right. So that's very close to the answer that that someone gave at the beginning, which is 1/c. But it's 1/f' of c, not 1/f of c. Right. So there's this extra prime. So now I'm almost done. How do I deal with the fact that I have an f prime over here and an f prime over there?
I mean, you can just multiply them and then you have some quadratic and you can solve that.
That's exactly right. And it turns out to be a straightforward quadratic to solve. So then I just multiply both sides by f prime of c. So I get, f prime of c squared is equal to one, so that's my quadratic. So f prime of c is equal to one or minus one. That's two solutions, and those are the two solutions. Okay, and that agrees with the geometry what we had. Okay, any questions about that? So that's an example of playing around with the derivatives of inverse functions. Okay. So I just have a few minutes, but what I want to do is summarize what we know about functions and what functions we have that live in different spaces. And then next time we're going to start proving more facts about them. Okay, so here's a list of the spaces that we have so far. So we have functions with infinitely many derivatives, functions with k derivatives, all of which are smooth, are continuous, functions with k derivatives, but maybe they're not all continuous. And similarly, two continuous derivatives, two derivatives, one continuous derivative, one derivative, continuous. Okay, this one's new. So let me add the notation for this one. So new definition. Let me write d0 of r for the derivatives. So this is the set of all g prime of x such that g is a differentiable function. So for example, I could take x squared prime, so 2x. So that's going to be at, in my d0 of r because it's a derivative. But also much more interesting ones like I can take this x squared sine of 1 over x for x not equal to 0 and 0 for x equal to 0 and take its derivative, which we did before. And that again is going to give me something that's in this space of differentiable functions. Okay, so I hope the notation is clear. So that's all I mean is the derivatives. Okay, and so I just want to figure out where these different functions live. And then next time we will figure out some more facts about them. So let me start with say F0. So that's this function up here. So that's the function I started with here. Okay, so let's see. So we can, it's clearly a function, right? So it's clearly this here. It certainly doesn't have infinitely many derivatives. In fact, it doesn't even have one derivative, right? So it's not here. Is it continuous? No, it's not continuous even, right? It has that jump. So the only question is whether it's a derivative or not. And actually I'm gonna tell you the answer, but does anyone have a guess? Is this a derivative of something or is there no function whose derivative is zero here and then one up there?
Must function be like, can the function be piecewise or no?
It could be a piecewise function. I'm perfectly happy with piecewise functions. So functions like f1 is a fine function. Yes, it can be perfectly well piecewise. But remember, the trick is what's the derivative of f1? It's almost f0, but not quite, right? What's different between the derivative of f1 and f0?
Well, it's not defined particularly at that point.
That's right. That's the difference. That's the only difference, but it is the difference. Okay. And I'm keeping track of that difference. To me, those are different. So so this is different from F0. Okay. And so then it's reasonable to guess and true that this thing does not have a derivative. So let me just list where all these things live, just so that you have, it's useful to have examples in mind whenever we do the theorems. So you have this list. So I'm just going to list where all these things live in the next minute. So this one does not a derivative. So F0 lives all the way down here. It's not a derivative of anything. Okay, what about F1? That one is not differentiable, right? Because it's not differentiable at zero, but it is continuous. So here's where F1 lives. And F2, of course, the derivative of F2 looks a lot like F1. And the derivative of F3 looks a lot like F2. They just differ by a constant, right? And so I can keep going. And the derivative of and fk plus one is going to have k derivatives and they're all going to be continuous, right? So it's going to end up looking continuous. Okay, what about these other ones? So these g's are ones that we looked at. Let's see, so I just computed that this is the derivative of g2 here, right? So that has a derivative. So we worked out that that's however not continuous. So here's where g2 lives, right? We worked out that. G1 is a continuous function, but it's not, oops, sorry, I put it in the wrong spot. It has one derivative, which is what we worked out, but that derivative is not continuous, right? So it lives here. right? G1 is continuous, but has no derivative. And it turns out that G0 is a derivative. And that's a little bit tricky to show. Although it turns out that G0 squared is not. Okay. All right, and then you can just keep going. So if you take the, if you have a third power, then it's continuous. And if you take a fourth power, then it's got two derivatives. And if you take a fifth power, then it's got two derivatives and the last one is continuous, et cetera. So that's what you get. And then this means that you can get all the way up here to 2G, 2K, and then G 2K plus one has K derivatives, all of which are continuous. So those are some useful functions. And let me just add one more because it's a useful one. So the function capital F of X, which is zero if X is equal to less than or equal to zero and e to the minus one over X if X is greater than zero, it looks like this. It's extremely smooth at zero and then it becomes exactly zero. And so that's another one that lives up here. Along with all the functions that you dealt with in Math 21. So the picture is that these are Math 21 functions up here, these smooth functions that you can use all your rules for. And we're interested in all these other functions that aren't quite as good. They're not quite as regular. And so we're gonna have to use other tricks to understand what the derivatives of these other functions look like. Okay, that's gonna be the focus. And I am now out of time, but in any case, I will stick around for half an hour if people have comments or questions.